It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of the big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
So I was thinking about the whole concept of routine today.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically how we, you know, structure our lives to kind of keep the existential dread at bay.
Yeah.
Like for you listening right now, picture a life that operates like a perfectly balanced mathematical equation.
Right, where every single minute is accounted for.
Exactly. Your grocery list is calculated down to the exact cent, and your domestic chores are so rigidly scheduled, they could probably, I mean, withstand a Category 5 hurricane.
It's like an immovable object.
Yeah, it feels suffocating to some people maybe, but undeniably safe.
Well, I mean, it's the ultimate defense mechanism, right? Against an unpredictable universe. You basically build this fortress of mundane tasks.
Right. But what happens when that immovable mundane fortress collides head on with like an unstoppable chaotic force?
Ooh, I like where this is going.
And I don't mean a literal crisis. I mean the sheer, giddy, unadulterated obsession with reality television.
Oh, wow.
Because if we look at our notes for the week of July 6th through the 10th, 2026, in the big fatty online universe,
yeah,
that is the exact tension we're dealing with here.
It really is.
It's this wild collision course between extreme order and curated chaos.
You know, I wouldn't even call it a collision course. Honestly, I'd call it a symbiotic relationship.
Wait, really?
How so?
Because you can't safely engage with that level of, you know, manufactured chaos unless your own house is in absolute rigid order. The friction between those two states is what makes this specific week so fascinating to pull apart.
I mean, I kind of struggle to see the symbiosis, to be honest. Like, take the relentless buildup to Big Brother season 28.
Oh, the fever pitch is real.
It is. The impending premiere isn't just acting as background noise for the week. It is the driving narrative engine for everything.
Yeah, it totally takes over.
The host is treating these daily, drip-fed casting rumors with the absolute gravity of breaking global news.
Which is so funny. Right. Early in the week, like Monday and Tuesday, the rumor mill is just churning out whispers of a highly anticipated time travel theme for the house.
Which, I mean, that's a classic reality TV production gimmick, right? Designed specifically to disorient the players and the audience.
Sure, but then the host urgently takes to the microphone to debunk a rumor about a live move-in. Like aggressively clarifying that the house guests are actually moving in on a Tuesday.
God forbid we get the days wrong.
Exactly. And I just have to ask, you know, why dedicate so much mental bandwidth to the logistical mechanics of a television production schedule?
Well, because the logistics are the lore.
Are they?
Yeah. When you are heavily invested in a long-running reality show, understanding the production mechanics is how you prove your expertise to the community.
Oh, I see.
It's really no different than a sports fan knowing all the intricacies of the NFL draft salary cap, you know? The rumors are part of the game.
Okay, I guess that makes sense, especially when you bring in the crossover speculation.
Maybe the Survivor stuff.
Yeah, there's this heavy chatter. The players from Survivor 50 are going to enter the Big Brother house.
Yeah.
We get these really specific mentions of D from the call center.
Oh, yeah, and Rick Deans, right.
Yes, the guy famous for flipping a coin for $2 million, and of course, the much-anticipated return of Angela.
Who is affectionately and terrifyingly known as Crazy Eyes.
That's a phenomenal moniker. Yeah. It tells you literally everything you need to know about her television presence.
It really does.
But all of this anticipation, it just builds up to hump day, which brings the official house guest reveal.
Courtesy of the infamous Chinbot.
Yes, Chinbot. Mm. So 14 brand new strangers are introduced, and the host's rapid-fire judgments are just, I mean, it's a masterclass in instant character assassination. It's breathtaking how quickly he categorizes them.
I mean, give me a few examples, because I think the speed of the judgment is the whole point.
Oh, they're ruthless.
Yeah.
So we have Ashley, a bartender with a boob tattoo who, quote, wouldn't shut up. There's Jason, a 35-year-old drag queen explicitly entering the Big Brother house to hunt for a husband.
Naturally.
We've got Koma, an MMA fighter, boasting what are described as delicious tattoos.
Delicious tattoos.
Yeah, quite a phrase. Then Latrice, a 57-year-old divorced mother of four. Melody, the ditzy blonde quiz host.
Classic archetype.
Rome, a 28-year-old pickleball coach.
Yeah.
And my absolute personal favorite, Yash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a guy who went on national television to declare he specifically wants a showmance with a short hairdresser.
It's just such a wildly specific romantic demographic.
It really is.
But notice what happens. Like, the second Shinbot reveals these bios, the host doesn't just passively consume this information.
Right.
He instantly files them away, assigns them a narrative role, and essentially just drafts them into his daily mental rotation.
See, this is where you lose me, though.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, his real life is this fortress of strict routine.
Right.
And yet, he is throwing himself headfirst into caring deeply about whether a pickleball coach gets along with a drag queen.
Yeah.
It just feels completely contradictory. Like, isn't tracking the minutiae of 14 strangers just another exhausting routine? How's that an escape?
It looks contradictory, I grant you that, but I'd argue it's actually a highly controlled release valve.
A release valve?
Yeah, think about the real world for a second. The economy, health issues, the actual unpredictable nature of human relationships. I mean, that is unscripted, terrifying chaos.
Yeah, you have zero control over any of that.
Exactly, but the Big Brother house. That is a closed terrarium. It is chaos, yes, but it is safely contained behind a screen.
Ah, contained chaos.
Right. He can judge Ashley, the bartender, all day long. The stakes feel incredibly high when you're watching, but the actual danger to his own life is absolute zero.
Okay, that makes sense.
It is a psychological surrogate. He gets the thrill of unpredictability, but it's a fully managed dose.
A managed dose of chaos. I actually really like that framing.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the adrenaline without the actual risk.
Precisely.
But engaging with all that televised madness, it requires a ton of mental energy. If his entertainment is pure, unadulterated chaos, he needs something rigidly controllable to balance it out internally.
Oh, absolutely.
Which leads us to the internal bureaucracy of the Big Fatty online universe. Because nothing screams rigid control quite like an intentionally complicated administrative desk.
Oh boy, you were talking about the infamous SSQD.
So question desk, yes. We are currently in the thick of follow-up question month.
It's a busy time.
It is. And the transition from gossiping about reality TV to enforcing strict, pedantic community rules is jarring. Take the interaction with Miss Bacon, for example.
Okay.
She writes in to ask a simple administrative question about the deadline for VD cards.
Which is a community inside joke, but still requires a real logistical answer.
Exactly. But the desk responds with its signature unyielding snark. They don't just give her a date.
No, the SSQD never just gives an answer. They have to build an obstacle course first.
Right. They cite a delayed trip to Nidra as the reason for administrative delays. And then they go on this bizarre labyrinthine tangent comparing the lack of clean restrooms on the North and South Dakota border to the streets of San Francisco.
Which is quite a leap.
I read that and thought, what does a rest stop in the Dakotas have to do with a card deadline?
Nothing. That is the brilliance of it.
Yeah.
It is the literal weaponization of geography for administrative excuses.
Really is.
The SSQD operates less like a helpful customer service desk and more like, I don't know, an authoritarian DMV run by a stand-up comedian.
And it doesn't stop there.
Mm.
Brendan in the AIO submits a query about ordering takeaway.
It's a perfectly innocent question about culinary habits.
Exactly. And the response reveals the host's strict domestic reality. He rarely orders in.
Oh, right.
The only exception is an infrequent pizza pie, but with the ironclad caveat that there can be absolutely no anchovies.
A very firm boundary. But, you know, the desk isn't just about food preferences or deadlines. It actively spins community conspiracies.
Oh, the Larry H. Vader situation is wildly out of control.
It's so funny.
Miss Bacon submits another question, casually mentioning that she loves Larry H. Vader like a son.
A totally normal sentiment of maternal affection within a digital community.
Completely normal.
Mm-hmm.
But the SSQD takes that single sentence and spirals it into an absolute investigative frenzy.
Oh, yeah. They start questioning if Vader's frequent trips to Salt Lake City imply that he is, in fact, a secret Mormon wife.
The leap in logic there is breathtaking.
It really is. To go from, I care about this community member directly, to accusations of a secret polygamous lifestyle, I mean, it's comedic escalation at its finest.
But sometimes they aren't even funny. Sometimes they're just a pure brick wall.
Oh, for sure.
Like a listener named Crooked Hat submits a question about an inflatable hot tub, and the desk just ignores it.
Just complete silence.
Yeah. And then Mizzen, who is specifically noted in the lore as the one with the sash and crown, she submits a query, and the desk flat out refuses to answer it.
And their reasoning is wild.
They simply refuse to re-listen to old audio to figure out the context of her question.
It's absolute unvarnished bureaucratic defiance.
And this is what I don't get. If I called a help desk and they treated me like this, like spinning wild conspiracies, refusing to look up my file, complaining about bathrooms in the Dakotas, I would hang up and never call back.
Anyone would.
So why does this community tolerate it? Is this absolute refusal to be helpful actually some kind of brilliant psychological trick?
Oh, it absolutely is. You're looking at it through the lens of customer service, but the SSQD isn't a business.
What is it then?
It's a sociological experiment in community building. Shared frustration is honestly one of the strongest social glues available to human beings.
That's really true.
Yeah, by creating an administrative desk that is intentionally difficult, snarky, and pedantic, the host is forcing the listeners to band together.
So the pedantry is the point.
Yes. They aren't just passively listening to analysis, they are actively navigating a shared, highly frustrating bureaucracy. It gives the community a set of inside jokes and a common adversary to complain about. It's like bonding with your coworkers over how terrible the HR department is, except the HR department is entirely fabricated by the host to keep you engaged.
Okay, I see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
The bureaucracy gives them a shared set of rules and a shared enemy, which bonds them together.
Exactly.
But rules aren't enough to build a real community. You need a sense of place. And that brings us to the ham map and the daily calendar.
Yes, the geography of it all.
Because if the SSQD regulates the lore, the map grounds the people in physical reality.
This is where we move from the abstract digital realm directly into the geographic footprints of the listeners.
Right.
The Fat Acres universe is constantly expanding, and the host tracks it with the intensity of an air traffic controller.
It's impressive. Early in the week, we feel this genuine thrill when a new lurker finally steps out of the shadows and adds a pin to the ham map in Daly City, California.
Okay.
And the host doesn't just note it. He immediately triangulates this new pin, pointing out the exact proximity to other longtime community members like Kathy Marshall and Daniel Scott Angel.
He really maps it out.
He does. Then we get a wave of expansion in Oro Valley, Arizona.
Which he wonderfully refers to as the land of French fried potatoes.
Yes, from listeners Randy and Shy Tom.
The mapping is just incredibly precise. He isn't just acknowledging listeners, he is literally placing them on a grid.
And he tracks their time just as carefully as their location, too.
Oh, the milestones.
Yeah, he meticulously catalogs these daily milestones. He details the celebrations of exiting the birth canal, which is their phrase for birthdays.
Obviously.
Right, for Bestie Billy, who is noted as the horse whisperer. We get a deep dive into the anniversariums of Digger and T-Wiggles.
Aw, that's sweet.
And there's a really lovely specific update about Baron Frosty and Mr. K.
Oh, about their house.
Yeah. They are currently going through the massive life transition of moving into a brand new home that happens to be covered in vines.
The detail about the vines is crucial, I think.
Why do you say that?
Because it's not just they bought a house. It paints a distinct visual picture that makes these abstract digital avatars feel intensely real and grounded to everyone listening.
I hear you, but I have to play devil's advocate here.
Okay, go for it.
Is this healthy? By meticulously mapping these listeners geographically, marking their daily milestones and tracking their anniversaries, is the host essentially building a decentralized global neighborhood to replace his own shrinking physical one?
Oh, that's a deep question.
Just feels like a massive parasocial undertaking.
Well, I think a parasocial implies a one-way street, and the evidence from this week proves this is very much a two-way connection.
You think so?
Yeah, you have to consider the isolation that often comes with modern life and aging. Physical neighborhoods change, people move away, mobility decreases, local coffee shops close.
That's true.
But by actively plotting those pins in Daly City and Oro Valley, the host is basically architecting an indestructible digital village.
But it's still digital. I mean, if his power goes out, his village disappears.
Not necessarily, because the digital connection is constantly bleeding into physical reality.
Fair point.
Look at the mail segment. He isn't just reading emails. He physically receives a card from Alex and Brandon that features a highly specific Old Testament joke.
Right.
He receives a mysterious wrapped package in the mail from Lamont Cranston in New York City.
Oh, and the haircut?
Yes. The ultimate real-world crossover. Durwood physically comes over to the host's actual house to fix a terrible haircut. You cannot get more tangible or more intimate than someone standing in your living room fixing your hair.
Yeah, that is a fair point. Durwood fixing the haircut proves it's not just avatars on a screen.
Exactly.
But maintaining that sprawling global village while also tracking 14 reality television stars, It requires a serious grounding wire.
It really does.
If you are extending your mental energy out to New York, Arizona, California, and the Big Brother house, you need intense gravity at home to keep the balloon from floating away.
And we find that gravity in the strict domestic and economic routines that anchor his week.
Yes.
Because the climax of this week isn't a reality show eviction, it's a Friday grocery run.
It really is. Though before we even get to the groceries, the need for control is heavily highlighted by the technology segment.
Oh, the tech segment. Just a parade of beautifully frustrating human errors.
Right. Software fails, devices get lost, and our bodies betray us. Moose P accidentally uploads the completely wrong show file, causing a minor logistical panic.
Which is stressful.
And Tommy is out there desperately searching for his Apple clock.
Yeah.
Having to rely on the Find Me feature because the physical object is just gone.
We've all been there.
And the host himself acquires new spectacles, noting with immense, almost disproportionate satisfaction, the noticeably better clarity of his progressive lenses.
Well, it's the constant friction of modern life, you know? You are entirely dependent on systems that occasionally just refuse to work.
Which is exactly why the Friday grocery gamification is treated like a sacred audit.
Oh, he breaks down that receipt for the audience with surgical precision.
He does. He spent exactly $75.26.
Yeah.
But the triumph, like the absolute fist-pumping victory of the week, is that he saved exactly $53.34.
That is amazing.
Including scoring a pound of bacon for a ridiculous $2.50.
Honestly, that is an economic miracle in any era. A $53 savings on a $75 spend is staggering.
It is. But he treats this receipt like he just won a military campaign.
He really does.
I get being thrifty, but what is the psychology behind treating a Wednesday bacon purchase like a high-stakes crusade?
Yeah.
Does the gamification of the grocery receipt actually serve as a psychological counterweight to everything else we've talked about today?
Oh, entirely. Think about the through line of the week. You cannot control the SSQ desk being snarky.
Right.
You cannot control your progressive lenses getting thicker over time.
Yeah.
You certainly cannot control who Chinbot evicts from the Big Brother house. You are at the mercy of systems, producers, and biology. But you can control the coupon for the bacon.
The bacon is agency.
Exactly. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say exactly, because it's more than just agency. Saving that specific $53.34 is mathematical proof that you still have power in a chaotic universe.
That's a great way to put it.
The grocery receipt is the ultimate anchor. It is the math that keeps the madness at bay.
And that intense domestic control, it bleeds into his physical environment, too.
Oh, yeah, the onion.
Right. He reports finding an errant onion hiding in a kitchen cabinet right alongside some toadstools, which is just a tiny bit of organic chaos that he immediately rectifies.
Got to maintain order.
And he executes a strict clean sheet night, specifically in preparation for the Big Brother premiere.
The preparation is key.
The environment is cleansed, the receipt is balanced, the fortress is secured. Also, he can safely invite the televised chaos inside.
Which perfectly sets up the final hilarious anecdote of the week, because it shows what happens when someone doesn't have those domestic boundaries in place.
Oh, the Love Island contagion story.
Yes, we have to talk about the Love Island contagion.
This story from Alex is incredible. So, Alex starts watching Love Island. Her husband, Brandon, initially dismisses it completely.
As one does.
He looks at it, calls the show garbage, and wants absolutely nothing to do with it.
A classic protective first reaction to reality television.
Right. He tries to build his fortress. But then Brandon becomes secretly, helplessly invested in the drama.
It always happens.
He tries to fight it, but the reality TV hooks just sink too deep. He completely loses his agency.
Poor Brandon.
So what is his solution? He completely bans the show from being played in the common areas of the house.
That is so extreme.
He forces Alex to strictly DVR it just so he won't be tempted to watch it when he walks through the room.
He literally had to physically quarantine the reality television to protect his own psyche.
He really did.
Brandon recognized that he did not have the internal fortitude to handle the chaos, so he instituted a domestic rule, a ban to regain control.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It mirrors the host's clean sheet night perfectly. You have to manage the chaos, or it manages you.
Which brings us right back to the tension we started with today.
The immovable object and the unstoppable force.
Exactly. The rigid, scheduled life colliding with the giddy obsession of pop culture. We've seen how the SSQD weaponizes pedantry to build community.
Right.
How the ham map turns digital avatars into real-world neighbors. and how a $2.50 pack of bacon proves you still have control over your destiny.
It's a delicate ecosystem, you know. The chaos fuels the excitement, but the boring, mundane routines provide the sturdy safety net that allows you to actually enjoy the thrill.
So I want to leave you, the person listening to this right now, with something to mull over in your own life.
Yes, think about this.
How do you balance your own frivolous pop culture obsessions with the unyielding, often boring chores required for your daily survival? Think about your own habits.
Yeah, what's your bacon coupon?
Right. Do you use reality TV to escape your mundane routines? Or do your strict routines like the laundry, the grocery budgeting, the calendar alerts actually build the sturdy foundation that makes your escapism possible?
That's the real question.
Could you even enjoy the chaos if you didn't have a clean set of sheets to fall back onto?
You really can't have the thrilling escape without the boring fortress to escape from.
You really can't. Well, thank you so much for joining us and tuning in to this week's analysis. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite y'all back right here for next Sunday's show as we continue to map out this wild universe. And as a mandatory reminder for your own viewing schedules, because we know the host would want us to remind you Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. Keep your progressive lenses clean, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat. Ha ha ha!